When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts for the power, performance, and reliability of a new SuperStart battery. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Look at the screen. William Blix, the great red dragon, and the woman clothed in the rays of the sun. Do you see?
I know that I'm not smart.
Then how did you catch me?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
Do you see?
You're so sly. So am I.
Do you see?
You're supposed to be his friend, Jack. Why didn't you leave him alone?
Do you see? Mrs. Leeds, do you see?
Yes.
You want the scent?
Smell yourself. Do you see?
Just you and me now, sport.
Do you see?
You've seen these films, haven't you, my man?
You owe me all.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Mindhunter. This is a podcast investigating and profiling Michael Mann's 1986 adaptation of Thomas Harris's Red Dragon, Manhunter. This series, we are picking apart every single crime scene. And today I'm joined by a real man head, a man acolyte, one of my favorite people that I've been speaking to over the many years. I spoke to him now nearly 6 or 7 years ago for the first time when we were talking about his great book, Off the Map, Freedom and Control in Michael Mann's Public Enemies. And he's like me. He has a day job and then he exercises his passion and his incredible talent for understanding cinema now as a vocation. And I've got him cycling down to the letter G with me. So I'm very excited. It is the one and the only Niall Schwartz. Niles, man, thank you so much for coming back and talking on another one of our programs. It's always a treat and a pleasure to talk to you.
I love to be a part of this little call caddy that you got.
Zip it on down to G.
Yep. I'm so pleased to be here to talk about Manhunter, one of the most rewatchable films I think ever made.
Absolutely.
And I've showed it to two people so far here. That's why, you know, I'm kind of a disc physical media fetishist of sorts. And I think one of the reasons we buy these discs is to show them to other people.
Of course.
And have people over. And Manhunter, you cannot go wrong with Manhunter.
It's always that it's that thing that happens where I'm a physical media fetishist too. I've got all these shelves that are lining my walls and I look along and sometimes my kids will come into this spot, this part in my office, they'll pop in the room and they come up to me and they look on the walls and so many of the films that are in those shelves, they're not allowed to watch yet because my daughter is not yet 8 and my son is just 6. And I'm like, but I keep looking and I'm like, one day we're going to watch a lot of these together and it's going to be fun. And even doing this show a couple of times, like a couple of my Aussie guests, you know, who didn't have the physical media were like, man, Manhunter's really hard to find. You can't even buy it on a streaming service. You can't buy it on an Apple TV or whatever. And I go, don't worry. Come on over. I go, I've got the theatrical cut. I got the director's cut. I've got it on DVD. I've got it on Blu-ray. Which one would you like to watch? We've got it all over here. It's all ready for you to consume at any time.
It's one of those movies that goes down easy. I think all of Michael Mann films are rewatchable, infinitely rewatchable. But Manhunter is like the genre film that, you know, it's not, you know, whereas Thief is a really in-depth, serious character study, and you know, Heat is a big epic, and Insider gets to know all the, you know, the ins and outs of journalism, and is, you know, wonderfully complex. Manhunter is very direct, I think, in a way that Collateral 20 years later would, you know, fits that same kind of easygoing comfort food sort of need, while at the same time just being so aesthetically rich that you know, cinephiles could just luxuriate in the color and in the sound and in the performances.
Absolutely. I think also it's the difference between, and this is the last time I'm going to mention it, but we have to consistently battle with it. It's like, it's why Red Dragon is so bad. It's why it's awful. It's because you've got this amazing, pulpy, energetic source material that is almost demands you to just like strap yourself in and just run with it, because it's just flying from the moment. You know, it's a really breezy read, and man, just he is so ready to be, to harness the energy and the propulsion of the script, and or firstly of the novel and then his adaptation. But then all that flourish is what like elevates it to like this, you know, like I think I am not talking to someone who is unfamiliar with like man's God mode filmmaking, but yet in 86, he's in like full God mode already. And it's like, oh shit, we didn't know that this is basically everything we want from kind of genre filmmaking. We want it to maintain momentum. We want it to be direct. We want it to hit familiar tropes, but we also want an artist to have flourish and style and,
flourish, style, and, you know, to quote the great Zodiac motherfucker, own it. So much own it in Manhunter. You know, showing the film, you know, that the marriage of diegetic and non-diegetic music, the Gata Vida thing that I'm sure you'll get into eventually, but it's just so, oh, you know, right to the gut. And, you know, whether it's Will Graham throwing Freddie Lowndes on a car, or this scene, just the, how proficient Hannibal Lecter is, how everyone is doing. You love to see it.
You love to see it. Everyone in this movie is really good. Everyone is really good. Even Lowndes, the cheeky bastard who we're about to kick off our scene with. So we have just finished an epic entanglement and undertaking of the Lecter scene broadly, with the great neo-noir writer Megan Abbott, with my favorite living film critic, the just dream that is Manola Dargis. And speaking of Zodiac motherfuckers, great Twitter personality Tom Regan's Hat, aka at Rufus Superfly, all triangulated over that brilliant scene with me. So hopefully you've been enjoying listening to that. But we are now in the follow-up scene, which shows, I mean, we were terrified by Lecter in that scene, but now we get to see Lecter in his most manipulative, which is just such a delight. We are 29 minutes and 35 seconds into theatrical cut. Scene goes for a couple of minutes. It's a real delight. Niles and I are going to start unpacking this scene and picking it apart, and come along. Let's get to that phone caddy together. We are really just kicking off this scene with this red bouffant, Freddie Lowndes, Stephen Lang, your guy, a Niles guy. He's in Public Enemies, is his next man movie, and he is absolutely one of the highlights of that movie, if not the highlight of that movie.
Yeah, and I just Winstead, and at the same, as I think right after this, he plays the lawyer in Crime Story.
Yes.
David Abrams, I think, is the character's name. He gets the great and credit at the end of the acting credits in Crime Story. So he becomes part of the Man Stock Company.
There are some fun interviews, which obviously you probably saw when you were researching your book, of him just talking about getting back with Man. Like, they just seem like chummy chum chums. I love seeing like members of his extended ensemble come back and work with him. And like, oh, I love Michael. Like, I'll work with him any day I can make it happen. I want to work with him. But now he's, you know, he's on Pandora with Jim Cameron. He's never coming back. He's there for life now.
Yeah, it's kind of great how he's playing that guy in Avatar, who's a lot like, in it's like he's a cousin to the tough guy, the marshal that he plays in Public Enemies. And, you know, his Public Enemies character is a very man character in the sense of, you know, he's the one who kills Dillinger. It is not Christian Bale. It is this U.S. Marshal from Texas who knows what he's doing. Here in Manchester, you're seeing how he's an annoying kind of pipsqueak of a guy, but at the same time, he's good at what he does. Look, you know, got the camera eye and the reverberation that we will hear with the sound effect.
Yes.
Which pushes into the next shot. I didn't notice that at first because you have to remember that a lot of us first saw this movie on VHS.
Yes.
Panasonic VHS with weaker sound. And it, you know, when I eventually saw it on DVD and watching it a little bit closer, you know, there's a shoo, shoo, shoo after the camera shutter.
And can I just say also, we're only in like the second of this scene, but it's, I love that the camera reflection is actually on that grass in front of that building. You can literally see the mirrored lens and you can see that he is actually shooting it. He's in a beautiful black GT, stunning car, aspirational. He's wearing this very almost like Conor McGregor flashy shirt, red bouffant. But I just love that he's actually at the location. It's such a small, delicate touch, but it's unfakeable. You know what I mean? It's like now someone might have mocked that up digitally, but it's like he is there at the place where Will Graham is taking snaps. Whether they use them or not in the final production, I'm not sure. But I think that that's just such a brilliant touch for me. It's just so perfect.
Yeah, we did have that, you know, pronounced shot of the grass in and out of focus just seconds earlier.
Yeah.
and here that's a good detail you picked up on, Blake.
Here he is. It's right there in the lens. Again, you wouldn't be able to see it if we weren't looking at it on like glorious high definition. It's just like impossible. Pan and scan VHS, we probably would have just been in this box. It would have been blurry, maybe a bit of green. It could have been anywhere, but now it's, you know, we've got it in all its glory.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then that shot.
And there's the shot we just saw, him.
So great.
Now boarding at gate 12. Eastern Airlines flight 217 is now ready for boarding at gate 12.
It's the
visual storytelling where you get, okay, we know this guy's a journalist. We see the headline, or we see his picture, arc up the headline, and then full shot. You have the respectable New York Times on the right side of the screen, and then Wall Street Journal slightly out of focus on the left. National Tattler, astronomer's glimpse. God, this is the world.
So astronomer's glimpse. God, kelp and vanilla extract. The New Jersey Mafia. Dawn Stewart, TV's hottest sex symbol, where accidents happen, and then FBI Manhunter. It's just like, this is not a reputable publication, I think is beautiful about it.
It tells you about who Lowndes is. It tells you, you know, why Will Graham doesn't want to be a part of the, you know, when we learned earlier that, you know, son of a bitch took the sheets off while he was in the hospital, and, you know, and those photographs were part of the Tattler, and it's sort of an interesting thing where it tells you what Dollarhide reads, also, you know, what kind of guy Dollarhide is, and it forecasts that later scene where, you know, just when one does what God does enough times, one becomes as God is. Here, astronomer's glimpse, God. All of this is tying in nicely.
So beautiful. Here we are.
Now look at that. The bars, and that box is covering the face of Lecter, as if we're trying to unlock who this guy is.
And then he's still obscured. So let's jump from this shot again. We'll just play it over. I'll make sure I absolutely actually capture it. But it's right here. You're seeing Lecter pouring over, still maybe with a highlighter with the case files, because he's been able to keep the case files from Will. He's got something in his hand there, and he's locked. So great. 29 minutes, 58 seconds. A great shot. How many actors these days would allow a director to go, I'm gonna open the scene where your face is completely obscured by a gigantic lock, and you're just going to be crisscross applesauce sitting on a bed highlighting for fun, you know, a case file. Not many actors seem that they've got the ego for that these days. I love that Michael Mann kind of gets that out of great actors. They're happy to play with whatever composition and setup that he's going to do, because they know it's going to lead to something that's really brilliant, and where they're photographed phenomenally and are put in their best light to show themselves off.
In that sense, both Lecter intros here are very different from what Demme does in a wonderfully different way in Silence of the Lambs, where you have that tracking shot and Hannibal Lecter, Anthony
just standing
Hopkins,
erect
right there, full shot. I love the Melbourne art direction for the Lecter space here, because it looks, both like a typical jail cell, but we know that there's also glass. Mm. And again, watching this on VHS, the glass didn't really register to me.
No, it doesn't for the longest time. It's only because it's actually when you see the camera going higher and lower that you can kind of catch these framing of that midsection of glass that is like, that's basically where his hands might plunge out to reach out and grab you and pull you towards him. That's what it's trying to, avoid. But it's almost like it's because of the framing of the brickwork and everything, it's that imperceptible. The line's imperceptible because of the curves and the almost like carving of the grade of the different, the mortar becomes like the lines for where the glass would be. So it becomes even more like less pronounced because of the way that it's framed. It's really great. Yeah. And again, I just love this when you come in.
Get up against the bump and face the wall. Stop running around or I'll mace you in the face.
I love the security guard, by the way. Framed by his side first, and then just, there's such a no-nonsense line there. We have to play it in all its glory.
Get up against the bump and face the wall. Don't turn around or I'll mace you in the face.
This guard knows what he's doing, by the way. He's also
he really does.
A good Michael Mann worker too. You get the slightly out of focus, thing on his the mace with his left hand. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's dealing with here. And perfect cut, and then moving up with Lecter as he rises.
And you're so right. It's like people who genuinely work with him know how much of a threat he is. And in the previous scene, he's like trying to lull Will in. He's looking up at him. He's talking to him. But so much of this, the magnificence of this scene is just like, I'm no nonsense here. I'm delivering a phone. If you even come near me, I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to really hurt you. I don't care. I'm not in awe of you like these people. You're like a dangerous animal. I'm ready to threaten you. Really great sort of procedure porn. Good setup here. Just all focused on the phone, getting it into the slot. Yep. Still eyes darting up and down as he
backs out.
Thank
you so much.
He does not take his eyes off of Lecter. That also tells you that he know something has happened in the past, perhaps with maybe another a coworker of this guard. And meanwhile, Lecter, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. let's go back to that. Thank you so much. How polite. I think he appreciates how direct this guy is. Stand back, I'll mace you in the face. So great. It's actually cool here. I just want to quickly pause it just for 1 second. Is that before, in that kind of dreamlike moment in the Lecter cell scene where you're seeing Will pour over and lose focus momentarily while Lecter's looking at doing his preliminary assessment of the case file, you don't actually know. Why, like, where his Crest toothpaste is, but because it's doing these dissolves into different parts of the cell, you can't quite orientate yourself as to where his shelves are, which Will kind of does get lost in before he snapped back in the other lecture scene. We can see here on the right-hand side of frame, as his shelves are on the far right of this frame there. So he Will's, it makes sense for Will to be looking over to that side and just pouring over everything that's on his shelves and then snap back, you know, right into, you know, right into it here. All right, here we go.
Thank you so much. I'll call you when I'm finished.
Are you ready for your call?
Yes, thank you.
Paltrow, Christensen, and Golub Law Offices.
Excuse me, I must have misdialed.
Not missing a beat.
No.
No, he gets the phone. He sits down with the phone. He only has so much time to do this. And he has his Wrigley's gum there. And these are all benign tools. We see the
a text marker highlighter, a blue one. Was he the phone?
Look, at, you know, he's able to, with that marker, open it up. He knows what to do with the phone. He knows what to do with those wires.
Yeah, he's sort of like creating the metallic foil wrap of the Wrigley's gum to conduct it and like sort of short circuit the auto dialing of the phone. Oh, I've got it. It's about to hang up. And then he's there and he's just down straight away into it, done. As you said, benign tools, his gum sitting next to him, his highlighter's there. He's highlighting well in advance of the phone coming in. He's expecting the call to come in, so he doesn't want the guard to think that there's anything out of the ordinary. And the phone is there, and bang, he's straight into it, just disassembles. Great little touch where, like, it's 30 minutes and 42 seconds as we're looking at right now. He's literally, he's already doing it. He's in it. He's in this thing. It's pretty fantastic. It's very Midnight Run with De Niro hot wiring a car. It's still my favorite hot wiring in any car of a car in a movie, because you actually see him do stuff. Like, you know, it's clearly like he knows what he's doing. It's like Jimmy Khan in A Vault and Thief. Like, you know, he's getting into this thing. He's bashing locks and doing other things. Look at those darting eyes. Isn't he magnificent?
Yeah, great eye work by Brian Cox here as he's waiting for the phone to go to a deadline. But, you know, from Hannibal Lecter, who's about to, I guess he's going to talk to his lawyer, and here waiting for the line to do.
Waiting for some kind of service.
Right.
Thank you for using AT&T. This is Operator 24.
Operator. I don't have the use of my arms. Would you be so kind as to dial a number for me, please?
Certainly. What's the number?
Area code 301-555-6624.
He's reading about psychopathology. He's just reading about psychopathology. He's reading about himself. I don't have the use of my arms. I think that's a line that should be best deployed, you know, when you're with your girlfriend, your friend. Oh, can you pass me something? I'm sorry, operator. I don't have the use of my arms. I would recommend.
And yeah, it's as they say, the man thing, the perfect use of focus here, keeping, you know, Heck Lecter in the foreground, slightly out of focus, the Sterling. Wonderful focus on that book and the marker.
Yeah. He's just been highlighting someone writing about him, probably, as you said, which I think is an amazing touch.
The University of Chicago Department of Psychiatry.
Dr. Sidney Bloom, please.
He's not in, but I'll connect you to his office.
What's his secretary's name again?
Martha King. Just a moment, please.
It's just everything is happening. I just want to pause it. It's 31 minutes, 26 seconds. Everything in this scene is so, like, light speed, instinctive reaction, perfection. Like, you just watch it and you're like, I don't have the use of my arms. Bang. I know this number off by heart, Sydney Bloom. I can't get to him. Okay. What's his secretary's name again? Like, it's just his mind is moving, you know. We obviously know that he's rehearsing it, obviously, because he's an actor, but that rehearsal, it's showing us what the mind of this guy is doing and how at pace he's thinking and making decisions and adapting and executing to every single thing that in every single potential obstacle that is in his way.
And as if to ingratiate himself with the employee, what's his secretary's name again? I know his secretary's name. What is it again?
Yes. The word again is really important. It's like, what is it? How many times have you done that in your life? You've just forgotten something. Oh, what's their name again? You know, you meet a friend of a friend or something like that. Oh, what's her name? Yeah, I know I've spoken to her in passing at a party. What's her name? Ah, yeah. Martha. Here we go. Brilliant.
Everyone at ease here, whoever he's talking to.
Yeah, there's no panic, not anything. He's just. And then when he gets to Martha, I love that we're going to see, you know, right now it's really calm and calculating. We're about to see something absolutely delightful.
Martha King's death.
Hi, Martha.
Martha doesn't come in.
I love this character that he's made in his head in like 2 seconds. Hi, Martha.
Hi, Martha. And I think I told you I would do this scene because this is what I do for a day job, trying to reach people all day because, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, what do I do? I'm the syphilis guy for the state of Minnesota. So I'm speaking with doctors and nurses all day long and secretaries. I need to reach people. I have to reach doctors, nurses, and get my patients treated and know that they've been treated as the syphilis guy, Niall Schwartz.
I don't know if that's on his business card. Can I have your card?
And if I was still in the office, I would have that card. But I'm on the phone most of the time, and I don't want to waste my time. I need to speak with a nurse with whom I could discuss charts and talk to who I need to be talking to. That's exactly what Lecter is doing here. He's going to be on hold. I'm on hold all the time, and I want to not be on hold and do what I'm doing. And it's the Michael Mann thing where we saw Frank do this in Thief. We're going to see Vincent Hanna et al. Doing this in Heat, and we're going to see Lowell Bergman doing it as a journalist in The Insider.
Put him on the fucking phone. He's much more now. Lecter's phone character is hi, Martha. It's just like so. You know, he's affecting something different. It's importance. It's someone who's important. He's telling her this in the way he's affecting his voice. This is an important interaction. Please don't dismiss me.
Maybe you can help me. This is Bob Greer of Blaine & Edwards Publishing Company. Excuse me, I must have misdialed.
Let's go back for a second because I really want to hear this next interaction where he says, hi, Martha, because it's not Martha. It's another problem. Problem, problem, problem. And he's just instantly solving it.
Operator. I don't have the use of my arms. Would you be so?
I just
kind
also
as
love
to,
really quickly that this phone has no dialing capability because they're taking it in pre-dialed, external. So all of this work that he's doing, it's just another great touch of like we do not want psychopaths to be able to reach the outside world. Like you know, we need to show you how hard it is for him to get to the outside world, and it's requiring memorization. It's requiring all this like performance. It's all
dial
that sort of stuff.
Dial a number for me, please.
Certainly. What's the number?
Area code 301-555-6624.
The University of Chicago Department of Psychiatry.
Dr. Sidney Bloom, please.
He's not in, but I'll connect you to his office.
What's his secretary's name again?
Martha King. Just a moment, please. Martha King's death.
Hi, Martha.
Martha doesn't come in nights.
Martha doesn't come in nights. Maybe you can help me.
Maybe you can help me.
We know that this is at night now because there's all these things that, well, as a screenwriter, Michael Mann needs to do, because he needs to count on Sidney Bloom, Dr. Sidney Bloom, who's a good friend of Will Graham, who would be a little sketchy about Hannibal Lecter talking to him if he was, because we see Sidney elsewhere in the picture.
Later.
And
yep.
Yes. And this is the type of guy who's got it on the ball, and he's wary about what Graham is doing as an FBI agent, and he doesn't want Graham to harm himself. He doesn't. And if he got a phone call from somebody looking for Graham's, his good friend Graham's address, I don't think he'd be so naive as to give it out.
Never. And especially, I think Sidney Bloom, in the context of this movie, would be wise enough to go, who are you, and are you, like, give me a number to follow you up or something like that. It wouldn't just be immediate, because especially he now knows that Will has gone to see Hannibal. And now it was established at the beginning of this scene. Everyone now knows that Will went back to see Hannibal. So someone miraculously asking for Will's home address just right after seeing Hannibal, it's all too convenient. And a random secretary who's covering Sidney Bloom's secretary Martha's desk at night, who we don't really even get her name, is not going to be as discerning to go, oh yeah, well, some strange guy rang up at late at night to get Will Graham's address. She's just going to read it from the little caddy on that desk.
This is Bob Greer of Blaine & Edwards Publishing Company. Dr. Bloom asked me to send a copy of The Psychiatrist and the Law to someone. Martha never sent me the address and phone number.
She'll be in the morning.
Well, I've got to catch Federal Express in about 5 minutes. I'd be immensely appreciative if you could pull it out of a Rolodex for me.
I don't see a Rolodex.
I'll bet you has a call caddy right next to her phone.
Yeah?
Well, zip that little pointer right on down to the letter G.
All right.
No Rolodex, a call caddy. God, he's good. Just every scene, there is 25 hurdles in this scene, and he just, every obstacle is just, he's too smart, he's too fast, he's too intuitive. It's crazy. And it's just effortless. Nothing's underscored. That's what's great about talking about this scene. Nothing in this has been underscored. It's just all bang, 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 bang. It's relentless. It's fantastic. Yeah.
It's what we're going to see the Mohicans doing with the natural world in the next Mann film. It's the frustration that, Trudy and Etlal's dealing with in Miami Vice in terms of they're too goddamn fast.
Yes.
Hannibal Lecter is so good at what he does. And Cox is so good at playing the scene in the sense of, you have to be fast. You have to be good to do it.
Look at his smile, Niles. Look at his just little, he's just having a good time. He was having a good time with Will, but now we're seeing him perform. You know, I think in the opening scenes of, I don't know if it's done as much in the, because Hopkins is playing it and affecting the role in such a different way when he's actually being Hannibal, like working in Italy or, you know, those other scenes where you see him working all very early on in Ratner's remake of Red Dragon. But it's when you see him encounter Will the first time, he is like a monster. He's a spider. He's sitting there like a coiled spring, and he looks terrifying. And here it's like, oh, this is how, for many years, he was never caught. He's charming. He's fast. He's intuitive. He's smiley. Like he's affecting a different kind of voice. He's unguarded and more like raw with Will. But in this scene, it's just all the performance. And so you can see, oh, this is the mask that he wore to the outside world when he had to ingratiate himself into society. That's why, you know, catching him is such a big deal, because he can just outsmart anyone.
And he's someone that I would love to talk to, this guy, Brian Cox guy. You can see any sophisticated individual, such as a a therapist or a psychologist or someone like Sidney Bloom, he'd be a, you know, Hannibal Lecter, it'd be a charming individual to talk to. And that's the way Cox plays him. And I was thinking about, I was watching Slow Horses the other day.
Oh, I love Slow Horses. God, good show.
And, you know, how Gary Oldman plays Jackson Lamb kind of reminded me of how Cox is here playing Hannibal Lecter in terms of being a, who we know with the cards laid on the table, a somewhat undesirable figure, but at the same time, the beats that are being played are similar in the sense that this is a charming man who has certain disadvantages. Hannibal Lecter's disadvantage is that he's insane, as Ram. And Jackson Lamb's disadvantages is that he's a slob who probably eats too many foods that give a person gas. And
But Jackson Lamb is 75 steps ahead of everyone. That's why you love him. That's why the first episode I imagine you probably caught the first episode of season 4 of Slow Horses as they're being released internationally at the same time. I was late to the party originally, but it was appointment viewing for me. And that first episode, which was riveting and just a great start to the series, you just watch Gary Oldman as Jackson Lamb and you're like, I love watching him because every scene, it can't just play straight. There's other layers of operation that are happening, just like in this scene. Like, this is a very straight scene, but digging into it now, there's just so much layering of the complexity of the way that this person thinks. And with Lamb, it's just one dart of an eye. It's a pause. It's a beat. And then it's all of the blustery, disgusting, grotesque, flirtatious, farting, eating 3-day-old biscuits in his car that like distracts you from the fact that he's like the coolest super spy that exists. He's the greatest tradescraft guy in the game, you know, espionage.
The motherfucker on the planet. And it's why that show works. It's why this film works with the limited amount of screen time that Brian Cox as Hannibal Lecter will have in the full work that is Manhunter. And in the same way that Oldman makes every second count in Slow Horses, Brian Cox as a magnificent actor and this character as put together by Mann as writer and director, it's the same thing where he's milking everything to the full extent, and wonderful work.
Oh, special. Let's get to the delicious bits. Here we go.
The name we're looking for, last name Graham, the man the book is supposed to be sent to, a Mr. Will Graham.
Federal Bureau of Investigation, 10th and Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C.
Now, I'll bet it has his home address there, too.
3680 DeSoto Highway, Captiva, Florida.
Thank you.
The cuts here. And it's, unless you're watching along with us, you know, and know exactly the sequence, it's this secretary, unnamed, sitting at Martha's desk at night, sharing his address. Man cuts back to the insert of the psychopathology, and Lecter, for the whole time, who's been on his knees, now stands up. And when he says, thank you, it actually now sounds like Hannibal again. Thank you. It's just, it is satisfaction incarnate. He's just so happy and
very much.
Thank you very much.
And he knows that he's gotten what he needs because, yeah, the Washington, D.C. address is something that, yeah. But he, first of all, earlier on, he has remarked that you're very tan, Will.
Yes.
Hands are up. And when he gets that Florida address, he knows he has exactly what he needs. And he knows, okay, this is where Graham actually is. Now I could get the cards I need. And it, you know, he gets that address, and in the sense that it cuts to the marker and the book, and in a way, with that marker and book noted in the frame, Lecter is writing down that address in his mind, and he doesn't need to.
He doesn't need to physically write it. You know, he's got this incredible recall. It's just like the psychopathology. If the guy who's studying psychopathology, who's highlighting stuff, does actually not need the highlighter to remember anything that he's doing. He's accounting for everything. God, what a brilliant moment. And then he turns around.
I'm finished.
And he's tried to do this, you know, the entire length of this scene or this phone call sequence is, you know, 90 seconds to 2 minutes. He's trying to keep it so lean, mean. He does not want to rouse any suspicion. I'm finished. We've got a couple more seconds of this rear shot, his black cowl of a sort of widow's peak hair on all this white background and all this dull white. And I love that right now, after we've seen all this glee and his satisfaction and thank you, we're not seeing his face, but the inference here, man, just looking at the back of his head, is like we're inside his head. He's trying to get us to lean in. What is he thinking now? What is he going to do now? You know, what is he going to do with this information? Why does he want that information? And we're not yet to the point where we know exactly why he needs it or why he wants it, but in a few scenes time, it's going to become very apparent that he is in dialogue with another character yet unseen in this film.
And he's finished, and with the next shot, as Hannibal Lecter is waiting, and one of the as they say, as to name drop along with Zodiac Motherfucker, other wonderful Twitter celebrities, you know, as the say the great Lex G would say, the man thing. And what we have with the next shot is the man thing par excellence. This,
yeah,
I love this shot. And the first time I ever showed this movie to other people, they were a little bit taken aback by what happens here, in the sense that man is the man thing is holding the shot a couple two beats too long.
Yes.
And here, yeah, I mean, no other director such as Brett Ratner in Red Dragon wouldn't do this, because you don't need to. Man needs to. Man is a kind of great artist who needs to put that kind of texture with this kind of shot that doesn't need to be there. A close-up of Hannibal Lecter just waiting, holding those beats. A character has what he needs. The movie has what it needs. But, you know, that kind of...
Man doesn't have what he needs yet, Niles, while his head's the other way. That's the perfect logical moment to cut. You do want to cut to movement, so his chewing is better. So that old very classic editor thing, you want to cut to movement. But that, the stillness of that other shot, it is ripe for a hard cut into momentum, right? Like hard cut from stillness to momentum to kind of reorient the film. All right, let's get back on track. We've just had a digression with Hannibal Lecter. Let's get back to Will Graham. But this little chewing, very kind of it's sort of impolite. The chewing is so like garish. It's like, I don't know. It's chewing. It's what happens when you're, but I do relate, because it's what happens when I'm being mindless, or I'm not minding the cordiality or the courtesy of people to not chew with your mouth open. It's kind of like when you're in the middle of like a scene and you're like, it's caught your attention and you're completely locked in. You're not thinking about the way that you're chewing in polite society. You're just sort of gnawing like an animal or something like that. You're just chewing over a bone or whatever the case may be, but he's just sitting here just chewing. It's just a beautiful note. And you, all this, you know, power being on his knees, standing, this moment, like with the camera pushed up, he's holding all the cards. He's so strong. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in his grasp.
And the beauty of the integrity of the moment is, and this is the other Michael Mann thing, where his characters are kind of elevated in the sense that what's happening here is not just serving the plot, it's serving the whole, it's serving Michael Mann's art in the same way that in that wonderful The Respite that we see in the next Mann film, Mohicans, with the Mohicans having dinner with the John Cameron family, and just that meaningless and yet absolutely necessary interplay between husband and wife looking at each other, John and Alexander Cameron.
I love that moment so much.
The camera giving this bit of love, that kind of giving love to these fictional characters.
He's not giving love in this moment. This is not love.
This is the exact opposite. At the same time, it's the same thing where the camera is elevating the character into this zone of transcendence, such as other directors are not thinking about. Hacks are not thinking about.
A
good guy who knows what he's doing, a great artist like Michael Mann, in the same sense, a great psychopathologist, psychopath like Hannibal Lecter, who knows what he's doing, serving all purposes. This shot, this movie, this artist, Michael Mann, perfect. Chef's kiss.
I can't improve on perfection, like that summation of this. And I think also a conversation that references Zodiac Motherfucker, Lex G, Brett Ratner, and of course Michael Mann is a God mode effort from you, Niall Schwartz. What a sensational, short, punchy little scene. But man, I love talking to you. God, you have a magnificent mind for cinema. And the scale of your appreciation of art, whether it's Twitter celebrities or cinema, continues to shock and surprise me. And I just love you. So thank you for doing this. Thank you for unpacking this delightful little scene with me. Thank you for taking the time before you run away for a little a well-earned holiday. Man, it's so great talking to you as always about man. You're the best.
And I'm so thankful and grateful that we have this little ability to do this in a podcast such as what you're doing. Thank you.
This has been an episode of Mindhunter, the latest Michael Mann deep dive at One Heat Minute Productions. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to check out other deep dive series we've done on Michael Mann, go over to oneheatminute.com. You can find links to all of our previous shows, including One Heat Minute, The Last 12 Minutes of the Mohicans, Miami Nice, featuring Katie Walsh and I, and all modern Mann movies, including Collateral, Ferrari, Black Hat, you name it, it is there, and the Jimmy Kahn eulogy, One Thief Minute. Plenty of shows over there. If you want to support everything that we do, we'd greatly appreciate it if you checked out our Patreon / One Heat Minute. Over there, you can see weekly new releases. One Hot Take is the show there. You can also see The Decade Project, where we look back 10 years on the films that are still hanging around, currently working through
2014. They'll be on the main feed at the end of the year, but if you are a patron for as little as $1 a month, you're getting them all throughout the year. And most importantly, as this is a Min Hunter episode, Min Hunter video podcasts will be popping up. Not every single episode, but most episodes will pop up as a video podcast as a drop there, so you can watch and consume and see all of the frames and images that we're talking about in all of these episodes. Every little bit of your support helps. So sharing, talking to us online at OHM Pods or for myself at One Blake Minute on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.